Well, more pressure is building within government ranks, as I mentioned, to commit to a new coal-fired power station for central Queensland. Former Nationals leader Barnaby Joyce has just weighed in. He's calling on the government to go to the May election with a promise to support a new coal-fired power plant. The issue has become a flashpoint for the current Nats leader, Michael McCormack, and speculation a challenge to his leadership could be mounted before the election. Barnaby Joyce, welcome back to Breakfast.
Hey, Fran, how are you?
Well, thank you, Barnaby. You've added your voice to these calls by half a dozen of your Queensland colleagues for the government to underwrite a coal-fired power generator.
Yep.
Has coal become a proxy for leadership here? Are you setting yourself up for a tilt at the job?
No, I've always, well, first of all, on that issue, because we'll get that out of the way, then we'll go to the facts of the issue. I am not going to call a spill. I am not looking for numbers, so we just write that. If there was a spill, the position's vacant. I am the elected Deputy Prime Minister of Australia, so I'd have any guilt at all standing, but I don't see that happening. But, you know, people always ask these gotcha questions, and, you know, there is the straight answer. So people say, oh, there's a leadership topple. No, it wouldn't be, because I'm the elected leader at the last federal election, but I'm not sourcing the job out. I'm certainly not looking for a spill. Do not want that in budget week. Absolutely do not want that. But I'm not going to, you know, buggerize around with weasel words when you know exactly, you know, what the game plan is if certain events would occur. But they're not going to occur.
So when you make that point that you're elected as Deputy Prime Minister at the last election, so
yeah,
you
like
feel
Malcolm Turnbull.
Yep. So you wouldn't feel any guilt. Does that sound a bit like a sense of entitlement?
No, it doesn't, because the entitlement comes from the Australian people at the election. And it's not so much entitlement. It's a responsibility and a reflection and a respect of their views. So next move. Otherwise, we're going to waste a whole interview on this crap.
All right. I'm going to come to coal in just a second, but just stay with leadership for a moment, because that's the prism this is being discussed in at the moment. Do you believe that Michael McCormack is showing enough mongrel to advance the case for coal? Has he been explicit enough in his support for coal, in your view?
Oh, look, he has to comply with the cabinet line. It's a lot more difficult for Michael than it is for me, and that is the truth. But we have got to get... Look, we can't export. This is our biggest export, coal. It is patently absurd that we're going to export it to every other nation who now has power prices in the OECD ones cheaper than ours, and getting a lot of it from our coal, yet we don't believe we have the expertise or the credibility to make our own coal-fired power station, because surely, if anything, we should be exploiting that technology for high efficiency, low emissions to all the people around the world who are using our coal. And if people, as they always will, and they'll be doing it now, say our coal's evil, stop using it, that's fine. Just tell me right now, what are you going to replace that export with? What?
Yeah,
what are you having?
But hang on, this discussion that you've been having within your party is not about exporting coal, it's about building government underwriting
absolutely.
A new coal-fired power
absolutely.
Generator. Why
absolutely.
Do you want that?
Because we can hardly export it to the world, Fran, and not use it ourselves. Say that, you know, or say to the world we're incapable of using it, or tell ourselves that live in this sort of mystery fairyland where we're saying to the world that our major export is evil, and then saying to ourselves, well, we don't know what in the hell we're going to replace it with. Maybe we'll all just be poorer. It is our biggest export. And the people in central Queensland have a different worldview to the people of Melbourne. Except that. Different areas, different places, different views. They want the jobs. They want the capacity to keep themselves especially cool in summer, maybe warm in winter. They want the tradesmen to have a future. And you can't just go to a section of Australia and say, you're not politically correct, so bye-bye.
Hang on. There's a lot of points in that. Are you saying the people of Queensland and the LNP members in Queensland who've made this initial call and now you're backing it for a new coal-fired power generator want that because it'll generate jobs or because it'll bring down electricity prices? Because there's a lot of argument about that.
Because it'll do both, and I'm happy to take you on the argument. Where do you want to start?
Let's talk about the power prices, because you say a new coal-fired power plant will deliver the lowest cost energy, but there's plenty of argument that renewables plus storage is actually cheaper.
Okay, you tell me the renewable. Which one do you want to start with? Do you want to start with wind? Okay, let's start there.
Well, we don't have to start with an individual one because there's solar, there's wind.
You've got to name them. But first of all, solar and wind, the inspired development of that was by reason of the renewable energy credit, which means one of your listeners is paying for the other of your listeners' power bills. It's very simple. It is an inspired incentive. It's a little bit like the tulip economy back when apparently tulips were worth a lot of money. It is not tested in a perfect market, open market condition. It is tested in a subsidised market, and now a subsidised a differentiation to where the coal market has to play. Now, we have the our targets, emission reductions targets.
So, yeah.
26 to 28% by 2030 and I think it was 5% by 2020. So can I just pose this question to you, Fran, because I know you're ABC, big advocates for renewable energy. How do they actually get to, how do they actually decide whether it's 26 to 28%? How do they do this assessment? How do you actually know what your carbon emission position in Australia is now?
Well, we measure our carbon emissions.
How?
The government measures the carbon emissions. They put out a statement every quarter or every half.
So a piece of paper is determined heat. What is the technical process?
Oh, look, I can't answer that. I don't know if you can answer that. But let's talk about the business case for coal.
It's very important you listen to that. I will answer it. It is a self-assessment process by the major emitters, okay? And then it's the compiled by the government. So basically, it's a proposition about a supposition that if the magical number is correct, we all feel happy. And if the magical number is incorrect, we all feel sad. There is no actual precise, like there is not a
Barnaby Joyce, what we're talking about here...
We're getting very excited about a magical number whilst we're putting our people out of a job. And in the same time, we can't really verify. It's just an assumption.
All right. I think the overall point is the world, and Australia is part of that world, needs to move to a low emissions future because of climate change, and you acknowledge climate change. So
let's go into that space. But the difference with me, Fran, is I don't think Australia by itself, especially by reason of 76 out of 150 people voting for something in Canberra, is not going to do one damn thing to the climate. There's no one disputing that. The next thing I'd say is, let's look at China. That is a major emitter. It doesn't start till 2030, and it's on emission intensity, not removed. They can just have many, many more coal-fired power stations, and if they're more effective, that's the Chinese view of how they're going to do it.
Don't we need to look at, as we're building to the future, we need to look at future risks. And what the market has decided is that renewable energy is a safer investment than coal. New coal-fired power plant will bring prices down. There's plenty in the marketplace who tell you that renewables plus storage delivers energy at a lower price.
And I can show you the best example on earth of why other people have a different view, because they're building around the world 640 coal-fired power stations as we speak. Many of them will be operated with Australian coal. So
In Australia, we have plenty of wind, we have plenty of solar, we have plenty of coal, and so we need to...
Fran, you can't be serious about this. You're going to run a heavy industry and an economy on wind and photovoltaic. It's just not going to work. And if you say you're talking about governments not underwriting things, what do you think? What the hell do you think they're doing with Snowy Hydro 2.0? That's been underwritten.
Well, the government owns half of that.
Thing, of course, you own it. But it's not growing out of its own market.
And it's delivering. It's going to deliver power a lot cheaper than coal will be delivered, isn't it?
No, it's not, Fran.
Well, yes, it is, according to the experts.
No, it doesn't, Fran. It uses twice the amount of power that it generates. It's a net user of power.
Yes, and then it generates power at a lower cost.
That's correct. Yes, it uses twice as much power as it generates. And it's a complete fallacious statement that something that uses twice as much of a product as it generates is somehow economically effective.
It's getting renewable energy at a cheap price, and then it's storage, just like a big battery, and it will then expel that power generation when it's needed. Isn't that exactly the argument say we need coal-fired power to have dispatchable power?
Fran, how much is this dam going to cost you?
Well, it's going to cost a lot of money, but so is the new coal-fired power station.
You can't just go into a meeting to pass a CapEx project and say, oh, it's going to cost a lot of money.
I'm not in that meeting, just to be clear. But, all right, let's go back to cost analysis, because your leader, Michael McCormick, has said he's got no problem supporting coal-fired power station if the financial analysis stacks up. So are you happy with that statement from your leader?
It does stack up. It stacks up because smarter people than us, such as the Germans, are going right into brown coal. Okay. These people are not dopey. We're not the smartest. It is putting people off the grid. And this is the core of my argument. I'm not going to have the lives of pensioners, from people who can't afford power, living in this sort of third world position because of some philosophical principle that others have who can't afford to pay for it.
So what's your message to your leader, Michael McCormack, who says you'll support happily a new coal-fired power station if the business case stacks up? Is that good enough for you, or do you want no conditionality on this?
I want us to build one. I don't want us to how many angels can dance on the head of a pin argument at the moment, because people are suffering because of it, because people are losing their jobs because of it, and because it makes our nation look like complete hypocrites. Our biggest export is the thing we're telling other in our internal debate. We're saying is evil or something. It's just ridiculous, you know. And if you want to completely crash this economy, keep driving up your power prices. You now have the dearest power prices in the OECD. You used to have the cheapest power prices in the OECD. Once upon a time, you used baseload coal-fired power. Now you don't. The more free power we use, the dearer our power prices get. And the person in the weatherboard 9 who can't afford their power, They are the victim of all this.
Okay. Barnaby Joyce, there's a lot in that too, but we're going to run out of time. You are an experienced political politician, political leader, political player.
I might take you to dinner. Thank you very much.
Do you do know that calling for a new coal-fired power generation will really hurt the government's chances in some of the southern states, don't you?
No. I love that statement. So we've got to throw our people under a bus to look after Melbourne.
I'm not saying what you have to do. I'm just saying you do know that there will be a transactional cost to this.
I am saying that. And we're in the National Party, we're our own party, and we can pursue policies in our own right. We are not married to the Liberal Party, and we are a party. If we're going to agree with everything they say, we should join the Liberal Party.
Okay,
but you
do accept, though, that this call for more coal will hurt the government in seats, for instance, like Warringah?
I'm not going to throw someone under a bus in Mount Morgan because of the views of someone in Sydney or Melbourne. Sorry, we're going to look after the people in our area, and we're happy to have the debate, as I am right now. But this is not a case of, because you in the National Party might hurt someone in the Liberal Party in the inner suburbs of Melbourne, you should stop doing that. That's like political serfdom. Now we'll look after ourselves.
All right. You just finally, Barnaby Joyce, you and your colleagues, some of them in Queensland particularly, are sending a message that your leader, Michael McCormack, isn't safe from his own party. There's a state election in New South Wales in under 2 weeks. Yeah. A poll in the Daily Telegraph showed the Nats are on the cusp of losing Barwon and Lismore. Are you putting state seats in peril with this division?
No. What? Putting people in Barradine in peril because I'm trying to get them cheaper power? I don't think so.
Barnaby Joyce, thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, see you, bye. Thanks,
Brian. National Party MP Barnaby Joyce. You're listening to RN Breakfast. It's 8:19.